The Breakfast Club.
Scotty, good morning to you.
Morning, Andrew. Wonderful to be here. I've got to the end of the week. No, I am. I am. I'm concerned about my other co-host.
Well,
given he is from a hotspot.
Should we be putting up protective screens
in the studio? I've issued an SOS to management for a large screen to be installed.
I have seen them. There's different type or different sizes of the screens. The ones at Bunnings, they've gone next level.
Well, they have the supplies to make extraordinary
right
ones
there. But they are some very large screens. Adam Ramanaskis, hotspot specialist. Good morning.
Thank you, Andrew Myers. Much appreciated. No, it's amazing. The two suburbs.
So do you drive through them or around them? Or this is...
No.
Have you been stopped by police?
No, drive. So Essendon, Moonee Ponds and Pascoe Vale, effectively the areas that are...
In the middle, but okay.
Yeah, we're okay. We've got a good wall around our suburb. we don't let too many in or out.
I understand that theory.
Okay. Have you seen any police around? No.
No. They were up Killer Road yesterday, I think, but no.
Big operations.
Yes. I don't venture out too much.
There's not much to do or see too many people. Not a hell of a lot to do at the moment.
No, there's not a hell of a lot to do.
Did you watch the footy last night?
I did. I think.
What do you think?
I'm liking the Saints more and more.
Yeah, so am
I. As the weeks progress, their game style seems consistent. There's a consistency to it, which I like. Dan Hatterbury was a disappointment last night, so hopefully, as he said after the game, it's only a short-term thing. Hopefully, Zach Jones from last week is only a short-term thing also, because they're two key pillars to their running game, which I talk about that consistency is what they've shown now over a month of football that I like. I think their forward setup is really, really strong. Max King looks like the player we all thought he was going to be. Tim Membry has already been a terrific player. They've got that, you know, small mosquito fleet, as people like to call it. Jaron Geary did a terrific job last night on Sam Doherty, but also Cade Simpson. I think because Doherty went up to a wing a couple of times to try sort of break the shackles, then Geary went across to Cade Simpson, and their defence looks strong. Their defence is probably a little bit no-name, but it's getting the job done, Scotty.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. The venue, again, I mean, they do play extra well. When that game was switched from the MCG to Under the Roof, it's just gold for them.
For those just waking up too, St Kilda last night, 11-7-73. Carlton, 8-7-55. Another slow start for the Blues, Scotty.
Well, yeah, the Saints kicked four early, and that basically held it to the rest. But you're right, I mean, Steele was great. Because he's not just tagging, this is why he's developed. He gets it himself. Now, they are, with King down in the goal square and just getting, you know, little glimpses every week, they're exciting. And in this day and age, or this current format, anything that's vaguely exciting and new score, we get very warm and fuzzy.
Well, that's what I was happy about last night. The team that took the game on, and they've done that over the last couple of weeks, it's obviously the game style that they're trying to impose. It's good to watch.
Now, Adam, did you notice one of the better players on the ground miraculously was good again, rucking by himself?
Well, I did notice...
I got in trouble, actually. Yeah. I didn't see the Bulldogs game from 3 weeks ago. Apparently, Paddy Ryder was very good.
He was.
I got attacked on the text machine.
But I didn't notice with interest that Paddy Ryder was named as an emergency.
He got over his soreness, inverted commas.
Yes, to then not be selected. I found that interesting.
Look, I know why St Kilda's done it. A backup, you don't want the kid to be, you know, burnt out. But
last night would have been the perfect opportunity for Paddy Ryder to play off the back of a 5-day break.
Yeah.
To give Marshall a bit of a chop out throughout the game.
Marshall is clearly one of these kids
durable. He was voted best on ground by your man, Jay Clark.
Yeah, my man, Jay Clark. It's just, I don't know, it's like, you remember the Braden Pruce going to Melbourne? Mm. Like, no one believed that would work, and it hasn't. Mm. He got injured, but he hasn't got a look in.
No.
So whoever his agent is, wasn't you?
No.
It's a very strange career move. Mm. Paddy Ryder's in this twilight of his career, but I don't know what coin they paid him, but I hope it wasn't excessive.
What would have been a better landing spot for Paddy? I know, question without notice.
Essendon.
Yeah, well, Tom Bell Jones, did he get dropped? He wouldn't go back.
Tommy's managed.
Oh, well, he's been dropped. So, Sydney's... Yeah, Sydney Sinclair is, and Lenae Smith gone down.
Who would you rather be playing tomorrow, Andrew Phillips or Paddy Ryder?
It's a very good call. I'm just going through the clubs. Oh, Geelong, he'd be handy. Geelong.
Yep.
They haven't figured out who their ruckman is. No. I just think being a backup to a kid who had his best breakout year didn't make a lot of sense. Mm.
That's fair.
Good for insurance, but...
Yeah, I know. But do you draft for insurance and pay a lot for insurance?
Like I said, the interesting part was the insurance was last night. A young ruckman off a five-day break. But the beauty of it, he was... Marshall was coming up against another young ruckman in Pitney.
Who'd been in good form.
But they had... Carlton have got nobody else either.
Yeah, because Cruz is out.
So it worked well, really, last night in the end.
And you just... you've played with footballers like this. I mean, you say, oh, the kid moves well as a forward, but he doesn't want to spend 50% of his night pretending to be a forward. It's not an easy job.
Well, he's playing the game smart. He's got Brendan Lade there, who was a terrific ruckman. And he was also a follower of the old follower, as we say, that he followed the ball around the ground and was actually able to get his hands on it. So he doesn't... The beauty of Marshall now as a ruckman, he doesn't push himself too far forward.
He doesn't have to, does he?
No, so he really works between the arcs, gets himself nicely in defensive position, so where he plays that kick behind the play when he has to. But it's his follow-up and ground level where he gets involved at ground level, which is, that's what, when you talk about a follower, that's what you want. They involve the ground level, whether they're getting a handball, receive, and being involved in play is really important.
But how funny is it, you set up, they spend all week, 4 days planning, you send Geary to Doherty. Everyone knew it was going to happen. But then he kicks two goals. Well, and the whole thing's set up by the captain, and it's just the horse was away then.
Yeah. Well, look, Sam Doherty had 32 possessions last week against Essendon, and he's been their most outstanding player this year.
Everyone knew the move. Yeah. But.
Yeah, it worked.
And early, though, to set the tone, and then the Saints are away.
7-2 in the first half. The game's set up. So Carlton are playing catch-up. The thing that I've noticed this year is that teams haven't been able to run other teams down within games. Usually when the team behind gains the momentum in the second half, in the past, they've been able to run them down. Potentially, I don't know, again, don't everyone jump up and down here, but the shortened quarters...
Oh, yeah, it's ruining the
game. Well, the fatigue is not quite setting in.
Of course it's not.
For allow teams to be run down now.
Well, you only saw the fatigue, in the last 3 or 4 minutes last night, where the game did open up a little bit. And that also might have been because the Saints had put the cue in the rack by then as well. So, it is interesting to see that.
I was just about to say who the Saints got next week, but we've got no idea still, have we?
It's a weird situation. We almost didn't have a game last night, too.
I actually love it.
What about the security scare yesterday afternoon at Marvel Stadium?
Well, that was from Monday.
Yeah.
So they had plenty of time to sort things out.
Clean it. The
two of us in this room were at Etihad or Marvel on Saturday.
On Saturday, which...
One comes from a hotspot, whereas I am a very free, nice CA.
Down there in GC.
Yeah.
So, it was. But I wonder if they knew about that on Monday or Tuesday rather than yesterday.
They would have known, wouldn't they?
Well, what did they say? He got tested
Monday. He got tested Monday.
Yeah, well, you get the
so
results.
So he worked there Sunday.
Yep.
Was there?
Did you work there Sunday?
No.
Oh, lucky. Lucky those screens are up in here, Scotty.
I know.
Workers are coming in as we speak. So they're supposed to play Geelong next week.
That won't happen.
Well, there were some suggestions last night that might happen, and then they'll get off to the hubs after that.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, but that hasn't been confirmed.
My information is Geelong will still be on a plane early next week. To the west.
So they're not playing St Kilda.
Well, that would make it hard.
Yeah.
What Geelong know at the moment.
Okay.
Now, that's a moving beast.
Yeah.
By the hour, almost. But I think the Geelong players are preparing to go west Monday or Tuesday next week.
I know we'll go into this game with Boomer.
Yep.
A bit late. But Cripps, I mean, still played well. We spoke about still. Is still a little bit of the old count. Like, Cripps got sat on. First half didn't get going. Do you know, is there a little bit of...
Well, I think now we're seeing Jack Martin go up into the midfield a little bit more, which is helping. But, there's no doubt they need another mid. And they've chased another mid. They chased Dylan Shield the previous year. They chased
Canelio
last year. Yeah. They just haven't been able to land that next
one
mid.
More.
Yeah. Mm. Ollie Wines.
Ollie Wines is maybe potential there. So they do. They clearly need one more mid, Carlton. And not just a mid. A good one.
A-grade, B-plus type.
All week, they'd spoken about the key forwards as well. Mm. Rammer, what did you make of their performance last night? So you had Mackay, Casbolt and McGovern, who, again, have all had under seven possessions for the game.
When it works for Carlton's forwards, they're very good. And they look like they're going to be, you know, it looks like it's going to work for a long, long time. When it doesn't work, there's no in-between.
Yeah.
There's no, well, they'll kick one or two each still.
Yeah.
It's, like you said, it's under seven possessions and it's really underwhelming. And you're questioning, well, is this going to be how our future's going to look? So I think that they need to work out, okay, if it's not going well, how do we still impact the game?
How would you change it?
I would have McGovern a lot higher up the ground.
Because then it looks too tall suddenly. It goes from, oh, this on paper, and if it's working, oh, look at them. And then it's suddenly, hang on, they're too tall here. This isn't working.
What's happening is you've got three key position players that want to play close to goal. So there's not one of those three that wants to get up the ground and play from 30 to 80 metres and do the work. And do that work so to create space behind him where then that next key forward can lead into that space.
Mm.
So you see on a number of times that those three guys, when they lead, they're close together. So that it's easy to defend. So they've got to get the synergy at training. Now, they're probably not able to do that as such because they're not allowed to do enough match practice at training now to help each other. Because I don't feel like they're helping each other at the moment. So if all three of them were poor last night. But if one or two of them are good last night, you accept that. Because that third guy might have played his role in creating that space. But at the moment, it's not happening.
You talk about midfield spread. It's one thing that I think the Saints have really established over the last couple of years. Yeah. I mean, it was a bit of Jack Stephen or nothing, and then it was a bit of Seb Ross or nothing. Yep. But last night, the different setups they had in the midfield, their ability to share the load across the field as well, so they're not having two halfback flankers getting 40 possessions each, and that's where the game's catapulting from. That even spread throughout the Saints was really impressive.
The reason for that is because Coffield and Hunter Clark have been able to come into the team on halfback flanks.
Yep.
So they were their two first-round picks from a couple of years ago, and they look now like they're going to be the players we all hope they were going to be. And they look quite comfortable. So that's allowed Ross to come back into the midfield now. So you got options.
Yep.
So you got options. So you got a couple of mids on the bench that it's really the old rotation where it's, you know, midfield for 7 or 8 minutes, off the ground for two, back on. And so the speed, they're keeping the speed on the game for a lot longer now, the Saints.
Yeah. I actually like what they're doing.
Well, and Butler and Kent can play high. They wander up to the wings and add pace. And how long to halfback. I mean, you've seen it. The indigenous kid who shows something as a forward pocket, and then you just got to wait to get him to a halfback, and then they become these players, don't they?
For a very slight player, he's hard.
Oh,
very hard at the ball. He likes a collision.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's two. I mean, Jack Martin's the same for Carlton. He's not a big bodied.
No.
But, geez, he's hard.
Yeah, he likes a collision.
Head, isn't he?
Yep.
No, they've done well. What I love is they went out and went, right, we're recruiting all these in one big hit.
So
to improve dramatically quickly.
So they'd want to.
Because they have.
If they didn't get it right this year, oh boy, they were going to fall off the cliff, I reckon.
Last night, both supporter bases would have went into that game expecting to win.
Right, definitely.
So you come away with St Kilda going, great job. As a supporter base, we expected to win that game. We got the job done. Carlton, on the other hand, you scratch your head a little bit again. They had, you know, two close victories. What was it? One point against Essendon, 2 points against
Geelong,
1 point against Melbourne. So you're still just scratching your head with Carlton.
You're not totally
with
sure.
The consistency piece.
Absolutely. Let's head to Stu, who's from Narre Warren, wants to have a chat about the Blues. Stu, good morning.
Morning, lads. How are we?
Very well. What did you want to say about Carlton?
Well, I'm a Blue boy, and I was doing more than scratching me head, Rammer. Some of the we just can't hit targets. Like, seriously, when we had a bit of momentum, Petrescu Seaton's running through the middle of the ground, a 30-metre option straight in front, and kicks it straight to the St Kilda behind our leading player. But I want to know, I'm glad you were talking about the forwards. I get so frustrated with not only McGovern, but Harry Mackay. He's 205 centimetres. I don't really want him to take marks. I want him to be bashing and crashing into pack so the ball does hit the ground. But he, at the moment, he is looking so timid, it's ridiculous. And I actually put it out last night. I said, I want David Rhys-Jones to go down there and just talk to him. Someone needs to talk to him and pull him aside, because for the size of that man, we're getting absolutely zero out of him.
Yeah, it's a good point. The skills, Stewie, has been not just Carlton. I think that's across the whole league. It's been a frustration of mine for a number of years. I always wonder about, you know, how often are they doing that type of training now, where they have to hit up a 30-metre target, because their training is so based around where the ball's moving to next rather than the actual skill acquisition. The Harry Mackay one is you're spot on. And that's what I was talking about earlier, where if two are going okay and kicking goals, you want that third one to be doing the grunt work. And that's what the grunt work needs to be, crashing a pack, bringing the ball to ground, hurting the opposition defenders if they want to stand in the hole. So that's, you know, that's more old-style 15, 20 years ago football, but it still rings true that it needs to happen.
Yeah, last night, Carlton defeated by 18 points. The Saints too good, getting the jump on them early. It's a good time for the quiz to start, Scotland. The Pataki three questions super quiz.
Oh, look at him. The board's lit up.
None of this 4-hour stuff from Whitey, although we almost got there yesterday.
What's he have? Seven, does he? That's a lot of
questions. Seven goes for way too long. And then half, it goes for way too short. Just one, and he forgets about half the time as well. We're playing for a sensational Pataki ham, remember? Check out the delicious Pataki. Small goods, handcrafted from the finest Australian ingredients to bring you that authentic Pataki flavour. Just quickly before you get there, Scotty, 4-0 Manchester City up against Liverpool. It's only 67 minutes old.
We picked that. Liverpool not trying you.
Yep. Celebrating. All right, go for it, Scotty.
We've got Ian from Pakenham. Morning, Ian.
G'day, how you going?
Very well. First question is dedicated to my co-host here. Essendon's 2000 team, which I think's the best I've probably ever seen. Who won the best and fairest that year in 2000 for the Bombers? I'll give you a clue. It wasn't Adam Ramanas.
That was close.
Oh, jeez. That's not much of a clue. what about another clue? Was it a ruckman?
No,
but Hidge, you're first up.
Oh, that's good. Well, the obvious one, James Hurd.
And the answer is at the moment, no.
Thank you, Eddie.
Ryan from Officer. Morning, Ryan.
Morning, boys.
2000 team of the Bombers, great team. Who was the BNF that year?
Fletcher, let's go with.
Very good.
Best offense and best defense.
The one and only time. Now, we're going with the Joel Selwood theme again because it's his 300th. Tomorrow, he'll captain his 190th game, which puts him sixth all-time AFL. Which captain in history has done the most games in the AFL? Captain his club.
Was Michael Tuck captain? Michael Tuck?
That's not a good guess. Yeah. I don't know why he's not.
I don't even know if Tucky's up there.
No, he's not. He is. He's not in the top six.
Not in the top six, right. Is that Ryan who's gone?
Yeah, Ryan's gone. He only captained from 84 or 85.
Well, Lethal was Lee.
1-300-652-927. 1-300-652-927 if you want to jump on.
We got Tom from Druin. Morning, Tom.
G'day, boys.
So Joel Selwood ties for sixth on all-time captains. Who's at number one in AFL history?
Kernahan?
Yeah. Oh, magnificent. Yes. Right, last question. This is the great Stephen Bradbury opportunity for everyone sitting at home. 1-300-652-927. We've got two phone lines free at the moment, so you better hurry up and get on quickly.
Now, Tom, do you know your tennis?
Jesus, got it.
And even better, women's tennis. Who won the 2019 Women's US Open title?
Ooh.
I don't think she's won another game since, to be honest.
Naomi Osaka.
Oh, she won the Australian Open that year. Good guess. Come back to us. Tyler and Shepherd. Morning, Tyler.
How we going, lads?
2019 US Open women's tennis title. Who won it?
Not very good on tennis, mate, but going to guess Ash Barty.
Well, see, this isn't bad. She won the French, so we've got found two of them. There's two others.
1-300-652-927, Scotty. Are you going to indulge us with any clues?
It's hard to give you a clue. She genuinely, this is about the only thing she's won. And then she was injured and didn't come out to Australia. She's young.
Right. 1-300-652-927. We've got one phone line free after Tyler's dropped off. So young, how old? Like 20?
Oh, yeah, barely that.
Right, okay.
I'm Googling like all my listeners should be.
1-300-652-927.
Stand by.
Oh, jeez, come on, Scott. I thought you would have done some research on her, at least.
I didn't know the country she's from. There you go. A bit of a surprise.
Well, you're going to tell us or not? Or you're going to wait for another couple of
calls? Well, she's from Canada, but you wouldn't pick that straight away.
All right.
If that makes sense.
James on the road has the chance to win it.
James, US Open women's title tennis last year. Who was it?
Was it Petra Kvitova?
Good guess. No, sorry. Archie from St Kilda. Morning, Archie.
Good morning.
She's 20 years old. She came from nowhere, won this, and I think she's been injured ever since.
Is it Bianca Andreescu?
Oh, there it is.
Archie, well done from St Kilda. Bianca Andreescu, there's a name that I reckon 99.5% of Australians wouldn't know. We'll have a look at how things are shaping up for the Quaddie Leagues. The first race six at 10 to 3 tomorrow over 1,400 metres. It is the Leilani Series final for the four-year-olds and older. And a favourite here, La Tagaresa, who is $4.60 quote. But, Quinny, there's plenty in the market here.
There certainly is. La Tigressa has been the market mover, though. $8 into $4.80, the clear favourite at that quote. River Jewel, a $6 second elect. Kingsbrook, $6.50. Great Duchess in great winning form, an $8.50 chance. Dino, 8 of the 12 runners come through the race, won by Great Duchess. How do you see the first leg of the quaddie?
Yeah, I think the one I want to take out of that race specifically is Kingsbrook. She's only had the two runs for Peter Moody. She had time between runs. I thought she ran just a little bit out of condition first up for Moods, and then a couple of weeks ago she ran really well, probably persisted for a run on the outside for a bit long, and when she got to the inside, she just missed. I think she's the best chance out of that race, but very wary of La Tigressa, who had no luck in a stakes race here for first up. And then Moonee Valley 2 or 3 weeks ago, she was on a very much biased track. So I'm totally forgiving that run. They actually met here on Melbourne Cup Day. La Tigressa ran second, River Jewel ran fourth, Kingsbrook ran sixth. So can line them up. And I'm just expecting Kingsbrook, the soft ground really suits and she'll have a tactical advantage, but not much between numbers 3 and 5. Great Duchess. She actually won on this day last year. She won the Revette final. She's going really well. She's got the big weight to contend with. And River Jewel, as I mentioned, her form ties in with both La Tigressa and my top pick in Kingsbrook. She's somewhere in the mix. So they're the four main ones for me, numbers 3, 5, 1, and 8.
How bad was the barrier draw for Great Duchess coming off three wins, two wins this prep, but how annoying is barrier 12?
Well, she's got terrific versatility. First up, they rode her quietly and she stormed home to win at Caulfield. And then last start, they took advantage of a good draw and rode her forward. So tomorrow, I would imagine she'll be in the back part of the field, getting into that probably three wide line with a bit of cover. There's a few there in front of her that may not get in. So it's not ideal, but by race six, if it gets very wet, track might be chopping out to the inside, mightn't be a disadvantage at all.
And Dino, if it gets wet, El Questro, third up, good wet tracker.
Yeah, ran second in this race last year, Scotty. I reckon this is a better race this year, but she's going quite well. She just peaked on her run last start, and I think if you like her, she'll probably produce her best showing for the preparation tomorrow. You'd think she's ready to peak for this race.
I've wanted to say this for a long time. Numbers, Adam Ramanatsis.
3, 5, 1, and 8.
It's nice to have three, because normally Scotty and I are dealing with two of us. So just to have that extra voice in here to read the numbers, as you do so well, Rammer, great to have you on board on this Friday. Race 7 is the TAB Silver Bowl Series final tomorrow at 3:30 over 1,600 metres. This is shaping as an interesting race. A couple of familiar names over the last 4 or 5 weeks, but Smoke Bomb is the favourite. Wide open field here too, $6.50 the field. Quinny, what else has moved in the market?
Well, Smoke Bomb's been the best backed at this stage. 8 into 6.50, favourite now at that quote. Walking Flying and Charlize have both firmed from $11 into 8.50. And at longer odds, there's been money for the 4th, Celicia, who's been 15 into 11. Dino, Smoke Bomb racing in great form, having won 3 of 4 this campaign, including a good win at Moonee Valley last start. But how much of a challenge is it to try and lead all the way at Flemington?
Well, it can get very tough, especially if the ground's testing, which it probably will be tomorrow. But there's a fair chance that this horse should be undefeated this time in, because that 8th, he missed the start badly and had no luck at all. So he's got a very good chance. I think it's a very even race. I think the one that is trending well is Grinzinger Ali, number 9. Danny O'Brien's only had this horse for a few runs, and they had him in the 2,000 metre race a couple of weeks ago and resisted the temptation of running in that and just kept him fresh for this final. And his run at Caulfield was an outstanding run. The same race as Smoke Bomb was unlucky. Grinzinger Ali was well back and really finished hard. I think he's got a great winning chance. I think it's a good race for Mick Price and Michael Kent Jr. I think Cabinho, number 13, off a maiden win last start, but this horse is improving all the time. And when he got to 1600 last start, we saw the best of him. Smoke Bomb's going to make his own luck. He'll be there with a legitimate chance. We're on scratching watch at the moment in two parts. Number 17, Stretto, is also in today at Bendigo, and he'd be winning race 7 today, I think. But ooh, if they scratch him before 7:30 and take their chances and he gets in the field tomorrow, he's got a legitimate chance. He's a very nice horse. He's going really well. And the other one is 6, Garen Piero. I thought out of the race at Moonee Valley, outside of Smoke Bomb, his was the next best run. And Michael Rodd taking over for Lindsay Smith. They've got a great strike rate going, and I think he's the other one worth considering.
Just checking the scratchings for today, Dean. In race 7, Stretto does have a line through it from the Matty Kamani stable. So maybe...
Just came out right then, so yeah, they're taking their chances and hoping to get in tomorrow.
So that is one to watch. Rammer, you always enjoy just a little Friday tip, but unfortunately saw his dreams flash before his eyes there.
I was straight on the tab.
Blinker's first time, you know I love that, Dino, on Charlize. What do you think they're thinking there?
Well, I think they'd have loved a good draw with Blinker's first time to sort of put her into the race. But from the outside draw, the two that are Blinker's first time have drawn the two outside gates, Over the Sky and Charlize. So it's just, that's the challenge. I mean, by race 7, as I said, with Great Duchess, it might be a good spot to be off the rail and full of momentum down the centre. So that's the little challenge we've got tomorrow. Rail back in the true position. Last meeting 2 weeks ago was 11 metres. So they're on pretty fresh ground, so I think the inside should hold up for a good part of the program anyway.
Numbers there in the 7th, Rammer?
9, 13, 2, 17 and 6.
Let's head to the Winter Championship final tomorrow at the VRC. Dina, and there's plenty of chances here as well. One of our old favourites from a couple of weeks ago, Rakovic, who does love Flemington's, a $15 chance. But first of all, Quinny, has there been any big moves in the market?
Yeah, absolutely. Good money for Plinciel. $8 when the betting opened on Wednesday, and the tab was hit with a couple of four-figure bets not long afterwards and has firmed throughout the course of the week to now lead the market at $4.60. Heptagon a $5.50 second elect, Shot of Irish $5.50, Vacillate at $9.50. But Dino, the money has been for Plinciel. He has a great record over 1,600 metres, 8 attempts, 4 wins, 2 placings. Does he look the one to beat tomorrow?
Yeah, I think he is, Nick. I just think he's hitting this race at the right time of his preparation third up. He was on a bias track and he was given a great ride last start closer to the inside to get up into that dead heat with Shot of Irish. But I just think he'll probably elevate again off that run and third up from a spell. Billy Egan riding up a storm and Danny O'Brien. He's only had the horse for 2 runs. He's really got a handle on him, I think, and he's going well. And I think he's the one to beat. Heptagon's having an amazing preparation. His Swan Hill Cup win was good. His win in the heat of this series 2 weeks ago was outstanding. He can handle soft ground. He'll run well. Shot of Irish will make his own luck up on the speed, probably dependent on how the day's panning out, because there's maybe a little bit of pressure with him, but he can run very well. I'll be giving a little chance to Vacillator, who not much went right for him here 2 weeks ago, and he's a Guineas place getter at 1,600 metres. And another one, Sir Coney, number 11, who had to go 2,000 metres last week, nearly succeeded, and it wasn't a hard run race either. It was just a dash home. So he'll be very fit for this 1,600, and he does handle a wet. So they're the five I'm including. You could go much wider because a lot of these horses are very good wet trackers. That's why they're in it this time of year, but they're the five I've settled on.
Now, Dino, I think Graham Begg and I were both very keen on Romancer last start, and it's still coming. What did we make of that?
Yeah, well, he was drawn out in no man's land, and that's where he stayed, really. And he placed in this race last year behind Reykjavik. The trifecta are all back here, all Holbein's an emergency, but they're all back again. And, you know, on that sort of performance, and most of his Flemington form, you'd say he could bounce back tomorrow, Romancer. So he's one of those that I'd have in that category just behind the five I've named.
There's a few leaders, Shot of Irish. Like, there's a few like going forward.
Well, it's crucial how if there are any scratchings, because Holbein would want to lead if he gained a start. You've got Shot of Irish, Sir Coney coming across from out wider, and Heptagon, I think, with the weight, he won't want to get too far back, so he'll be right there. So, there's adequate amount of speed in the race. And you know, I think most of the good chances have drawn where they can take advantage of a good run. So, I think it sets up well, as I said, especially for Plan CL, but there's not a lot between them.
Numbers there, Rama?
5, 2, 8, 9 and 11.
5, 2, 8, 9 and 11 for race 8, the second last leg of the quaddie. And let's look at the Get Out Stakes tomorrow. It is over 1,400 metres, 437 the last race at headquarters. And Splendor on the Grass has been spoken about a bit by Ben Hayes this week. Some good noises coming out of Lindsay Park. Is he still heading the market here, Quinny?
Yes, Splendor on the Grass. She has been the best backed as well, Maisie. $6 into $4.40. The favourite from Cordelia, who's a $5.50 second elect. Beauty Bolt, $7.50. Quantum Mechanic, $10. The chances certainly don't stop there. Dino does look to be one of those races where the form lines are coming through. Good, consistent runners in town or winning form through the bush. Which way do you lean?
I think track conditions crucial here because I'm pretty keen that Cordelia and Splendor on the Grass have the most upside, or certainly Cordelia has the most upside, and Splendor on the Grass's run last week was just amazing. She's on the 7 day backup, but I am going with Cordelia. She'll need a great Damien Oliver ride from the draw, but as I continue to reference, by this stage of the day, maybe that three wide train and just blending into the race might be the place to be. Splendor on the Grass, I think, will run well again. Beauty Bolt freshened up, ran quite well last start. And the other one I think worth considering is Dyer Quinn. But she needs the range. She'd want a soft seven to get to the heavy range. If it doesn't come up in that sort of range, she's probably in a bit of trouble. She really likes the soft ground, but did a good job to win at Bendigo last start.
All righty, we'll monitor the track conditions all throughout tomorrow. We'll have the latest for you on RSN, so keep it locked on 927 or jump on the app or online as well. Now, Rama, just those final numbers in the final leg of the quaddie.
7, 1, 2 and 5.
All right, things might change a little as well, so make sure you're listening to Dean on the Melbourne Form Panel tomorrow from 8 o'clock. Now, Dean, the formula bet for this week. Which way are we heading? I know Rama is always keen if it's outside the quaddy legs. Where have we fallen tomorrow?
Yeah, it's outside the quaddy legs, so that's a good start. Hopefully we can get two legs this week. We've been one, I think, the last three Saturdays. So hopefully we can go a little bit better for Lee Munro of Williamstown. And for Lee, we're having $40 to win on race one, number 6, Sense of Honour. $40 to win on race 3, number 1, Cherry Tortoni. And $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 1, number 6, into race 3, number 1 for Lee Munro of Williamstown.
What's the market saying at tab.com.au, Quinny?
Both runners are paying $2.80. The all-up comes to $7.84.
Oh, very nice. How about a Rama Ruffy to finish on a high on the Friday form this morning, Dean?
It's also outside the quaddy legs, Maisie. So we go race 5, number 9, Lord Von Costa. He's bobbed up at down the straight most of his career and run very well, and he's got form around the leading chances, and I just think he's ready to peak tomorrow. I think he's great odds. Craig Williams has been with him all preparation, sticks, and I think he's got a tremendous chance at good odds. Lord Von Costa, race 5, number 9.
That's 7 races.
You're happy with that?
Ah, oh, that's outstanding. That's an outstanding day.
And you're heading down to Geelong too, this is just about all over before that game starts.
Absolutely.
Magnificent news for you. Quiddy, how are we looking with Lord Von Costa in race 5 tomorrow?
$13 for Dino and his army of fans. I can't wait to give an update in about 25 minutes how the money has come.
It is one of my highlights. Fastest fingers first here. As soon as Dean mentions the Rabba Ruffy, everyone tries to get on their tab app and get in as quick as possible. Dean, thanks for all your time this morning. We'll hear tomorrow, of course, on the form panel, and hopefully not too much rain throughout today.
Terrific. Thanks, guys.
Dean Lester joining us there for the Friday form. Quinny, what have you got for us tomorrow? Leave us with a winner.
Well, I better steer you into my little filly in the last, otherwise I'll get in trouble. So hopefully Kurume can run well at $17 in the last race on the program. But it always fills me with confidence when Dino makes one of his specials the bet I've made. The best in the paper, I like Cherry Tortoni as well, race 3, number 1. And no reason why Shapata won't carry on his winning ways, race 2, number 3. So hopefully he can fill the book nice and early in the day.
Well, it was a dream for all of ours. I mean, when I talk about my brothers, it's, one of four boys and had the twins above that dreamt of it first and got to live it out. And then I was the one that always dreamt of playing a Geelong jumper. So I actually got to live the real dream. So it's exciting. It's, just lucky to have done it and done it all here, you know, at the club that I love most.
Joel Selwood speaking yesterday ahead of Game 300 tomorrow down at the Cattery. I heard his parents talking yesterday, and they tried every which way to get a bit of an exception to get in the ground, but it's not happening, unfortunately. So no friends or family there for Joel Selwood in the stands, but there will be plenty of mates out on the field. And one of those is Tom Hawkins, the Geelong superstar full forward, who joins us this morning. Tom, good morning.
Morning.
How strange is it going to be running out in a big milestone game? You've played in lots of these for a lot of your friends and teammates over the years with no friends or family allowed at the ground. And I don't think you can have a catch-up of more than four or five people afterwards as well.
No, it's... it is really disappointing that the circumstances mean that we don't have friends, family and loved ones. Obviously, both for Pat a fortnight ago or 3 weeks ago, and now for Gary and Joel, and even Jack Henry to an extent as well. Jack plays his 50th game, which is going to be overshadowed a bit, but milestones are milestones, and Gary and Joel started out at 50 games once. Who would have thought they'd get to 300 and 350 combined, but each individually, but it is a shame, but as we all know, in the football world and right across the world in any industry, it has been a phenomenally strange year. So, I suppose we'll just keep looking to adapt and try and make it as memorable a night as we can for two legends and, arguably two of the greatest Geelong players to have ever played. So it will be strange, but we've had 5 rounds to get used to no crowds. In the stand, so I'm sure we'll be okay.
I know it's probably too difficult a task to ask you to describe them both as players and people, but I did want to ask you about Joel Selwood in particular. When did you realise there was something special about him? Because you both arrived at very similar times at the Cats. When did you think this guy is something else?
Yeah, it was pretty early on, to be honest, without sort of sounding too cliche. He was highly touted as a junior. He had knee issues, which I still find pretty funny to the day. But look, from my experience, I came into the AFL system not really knowing what it was going to entail, and I think Joel coming from a family of 4 boys and everything being very competitive, that was really instilled early into him. He had a little bit of an insight, but his work ethic and drive to be the best player he could, was really evident early on. So I knew with him the first 2 or 3 weeks, that this is a guy that that is going to be really successful in whatever he does, but particularly in football. He had a real thirst for the game, and just was really eager to learn. So I've, in a lot of ways, I've learned a lot from Joel, particularly early on, and you'll hear a lot of his teammates talk about that. But I learned that if you're a talented junior, the work's only half begun. His work ethic is unbelievable. So that's something that I really learned early off, and learned off him early on, and probably that was the thing that I recognised early, that he was going to be a good player.
Tommy, you're one of his best mates. Are you giggling a bit that even though he's captain, he doesn't like talking about himself?
No, he doesn't, Scotty. You're right. He's a fantastic player. I think as football players too, just quickly while we're still on Joel, you sometimes can get lose sight of what sort of people they are. So Joel's one of my best mates. He was in my wedding party. I was in his. We've spent a lot of time together over the last 14 years. So we've created some great memories. But he's an exceptional person off the field. So that's the thing that draws me to him is the fact that he is such a good person. He's got a great sense of humour. We don't always see that though, Scotty. He can be quite serious at times, but I take that nothing away from him. He's in a role where he's the captain of the club. He's an elite leader right across the AFL. I do giggle at times, but he's a wonderful person to play, and sometimes words can't truly reflect your feelings for them. But it's been a wonderful journey with him.
And Tom, what about Gary? Obviously, achieved so much at Geelong in his first stint there. But when he came back, you were well established as a leader at Geelong. Was he different when he came back to Geelong after his stint at the Gold Coast?
No, I wouldn't say he was different. I still think he possessed all the great things that I saw in him when I spent a little bit of time with him before he headed off to the Gold Coast. He probably came home a little bit more well-rounded, and then maybe that's more so in your development as a player generally. But the way that he really engages with the younger players and helps them along the way and along their journey, he's been really noticeable from my point of view. So, he looks like he's really enjoyed himself being home, and he's been fantastic for the footy club, not only on the field, but it's the stuff that, again, like Joel, that we don't see that's off the field, or the general public probably don't see that's off the field, where he's been fantastic.
And the team itself, Tom, there's moments or games against Hawthorn, for example, where you guys look like you're the best team in the competition, and there's, I think, moments against Carlton, and albeit you beat Melbourne, where we're scratching our head of sort of what type of team Geelong is. Are you happy with where the team's at as a whole at the moment? Are you happy with the way the team's playing? Is it where you want to be right now?
No, it's certainly not where we want to be. Obviously, we do think that we're in a premiership window. We think our side is good enough, but I was listening to the footy last night, and Wayne Carey made a really good point that I think this year everyone feels like that they will be in a window. There's 18 sides, well, certainly 16 sides that are on their given day are as good as anyone in the competition. So it's a unique sort of set of circumstances with shorter games, but I think eventually the season will even itself out, and the best sides will continue to win. For us at the moment, we're certainly not sitting on our hands, happy with the way that we're playing. We've been really inconsistent the first sort of 4 weeks back, so It's something we're trying to rectify. I don't have the answers to give you right now, but I suppose the proof will be in how we get out and perform on the weekend. We took a little step forward against Melbourne. We probably got a pass mark, but that's probably as far as you'd like to go. So we're well aware of the challenges that face us in front of us, but we're also really aware that if we can get it together and play the football that we're really capable of, there's an opportunity for a side to be premiers in 2020, and we want that to be us. So we'll continue to work hard internally and review how we need to and how we think is going to put us in the best position. So we'll keep at it.
Boomer Harvey is with us for the Friday footy preview. Good morning, Boomer.
Good morning, boys. How are we going?
Have you turned the heater on in your house? You look like the coldest man on earth on Zoom.
You can see on Zoom, you can see the sun belting through the window there. But you know what, Maisie? I did turn the heater on, yes.
It was. Now, Rama told us before the break, there's been a couple of North Melbourne players who've shifted accommodation a few times this week. Not happy with their Airbnb.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I had yesterday off work. I'm not full-time there, obviously. Can I ask a question here and anybody jump in? What is the point of this? So we're on lockdown anyway, yeah? You live inside. If your car's not in the garage, it's in your driveway. You walk out of your front door, hop in your car, drive down to Arden Street, park, get out, walk inside, and then we're all in groups of 8, 10, or whatever we need to be in. You finish training, you get back in your car, you drive back home, either in your garage or in your driveway, and go back inside. What's the risk of getting anything there?
So how many other people within that suburb can say that they're doing the same thing?
They're going 100%
right. They're going to work. So you're spot on in what you're saying, Boomer, but how do you police everybody that they're going to do that?
I fully understand that, Rammer. I thought I missed something at the start because I would have thought there's more chance of moving into an Airbnb with other players and potentially being, you know, someone could have stayed there last week, hadn't got cleaned thoroughly. And I don't know, I understand the whole, you know, if it's Ascot Vale, that Ascot Vale, Safeway or Coles might have, just don't go to Coles or get your wife to shop or partner to shop or go to a different Coles. I thought it was really funny, to be quite honest with you. I just don't see how you're going to get COVID sitting in your car driving the training. I might be wrong. I might have missed something. So if I have, somebody please send an SMS in and let me know.
Explain to us, Boomer, because you're part of the bubble. Explain to us, are you allowed to go to Coles and Woolworths under AFL restrictions at the moment?
So you're allowed to do four things. You're allowed to go and exercise, not with anybody else. You're allowed to go and get food and supplies. Medical treatment and work. They're the four things that we're allowed to do. Everything outside of that is a big no. Even to the extent of, I think it's 48 hours before game day that you've got to be in total lockdown and not see any immediate family, so brothers, sisters, mum, dad, stuff like that. So it's gone to another level, and that's fine. You can live around those restrictions. I just thought it was a bit rich for the AFL asking people to move out of their actual homes.
So 48 hours either side of their test, they can't see anybody.
So is that including your wife or?
Of course.
No, that's the people that you live with.
Yeah,
the people that you live with is fine, but there's no outside.
No family.
Yeah, you know, I go and see anyone else.
No
Correct.
Immediate family.
Right.
So it's hard. Look, it's not hard. It is what it is. That's the restrictions they're under. That's the restrictions they've agreed to, so they've got to follow them.
Well, I'll ask you and Scotty. I'll ask all three of you. Did you get bored during the lockdown period? Were you finding yourself going nuts towards the end, staying inside all the time, or you know, only going out for exercise? Or were you okay?
I quite embrace not having to deal with people. no, golf was a bit of a setback, I think. But yeah, look, it wasn't ideal.
Yeah.
But I adjusted quite well.
The homeschooling.
Oh, that was wow. That's sort tough. Of
that is that could be back
that
on the
test,
agenda.
That tested my patience. That's fair to say a few times.
That could be back if you heard a couple of the government conversations yesterday. It's a day-by-day proposition.
My daughter's in year eight. She called me upstairs one day. She was obviously online doing some homework, and she said, "Dad, can you help me with my maths?" And I thought that was my strong point. I said, "Absolutely, I can help you with your maths." I was down within 45 seconds and said, "Lacey, I've got no idea about this stuff." I then proceeded to sit at the desk with my eight-year-old, who's in grade two, and helped him with his maths, so that was okay.
That's about your level, isn't
That's
it?
That's actually, the grade two maths is maths that you actually need in life, rather than the year eight maths, which you'd never use.
You haven't used any
I said exactly the same thing.
I haven't, mate.
I said exactly the same thing. I said, unfortunately, Lacey, this math that you're doing, you'll never use ever again unless you're a civil engineer or something like this. And I went down and did 6 times 6 with Hudson, so it was a lot easier.
As a kid, remember you always excelled at your 6-time timetables? Oh, yeah. Because you were a footy nut.
The footy goals? Yes, the footy goals, absolutely. Yep. 100%. Absolutely. It's exactly what my 8-year-old's doing, Maisie. Hudson's all over his sixes.
What did you think of
I said to him, what's six times four, mate? He goes, oh, I don't know, Dad. I said, well, how many is 4 goals? 24. But there you go, that's perfect.
The problem with me is I used to write, 6 times 4 was 40, and get it confused with the footy score. So I was no chance.
Finding a lot out about our man over here.
Now,
thank God it's his last day.
Boomer, why did you make
six
up last
by
night?
4 is 40.
No, well, 6, 4, 40. It's the footy score, mate. I used to get mixed up.
Oh, okay.
Come on. Now, what did you make of last night, Boomer?
Oh, what I seen last night, I thought the Saints were outstanding. Brett Ratton promised a really aggressive brand of football, and I think we're seeing it. Oh, I think a lot of other coaches, the AFL would certainly like them to follow the Saints game plan, because I think they're playing super aggressive. I like the way that they're moving the ball. They've got the cattle to do it now with Hill, and I know Hannanbury went down last night. They've got some really good players through the midfield. Gresham's still a star, I believe. And they've got some tall forwards that actually have a crack at going for their marks. I think the Saints are going to be a really good team. Is that this year? I'm not 100% sure. But in the coming years, if they play this brand of football, and I know teams will work them out, and they say that defences outweigh and win over offence, but I like what Brett Ratton's doing. On the other hand, Carlton, well, I think they might have been 9 points at half-time, weren't they, or quarter-time, and it was just... didn't look like scoring. But when they put their foot on the pedal, like North Melbourne did last week, they kicked 4 goals in a short period of time and looked a much better team. But I still think football as a whole spectacle is not fantastic just yet. I still think we've got another fortnight to go to put up with the footy that we're seeing. But really liking what Brett Ratton's doing at the minute, Maisie.
How many Alistair Clarkson holding the ball decisions did you see last night, guys? Or this is for all three of you. I reckon I counted 3 that wouldn't have been paid last week.
I didn't notice.
I didn't even think about it, to be honest with you. No, I didn't pay
attention. I agree, Maisie. There was only a handful. What the players did, though, they made it look like there was more of an effort to get rid of the ball and didn't just fall to the ground. And I know the players have been, or the coaches have been briefed on that. So obviously the coaches would brief the players as well. So I did see a bit more of one of those fake attempts where you punch the ball 63 times in 2 seconds as I am trying to get rid of it. So that's the only thing that changed for me.
Do you think that'll open it up at all, Boomer? I mean, it seems a real band-aid solution to me.
Yeah, I still think that the prior opportunity, if you pick up the football and there's no way you can possibly get rid of the ball, whether you're attempting or not, it can't be holding the ball I don't see how it changes our game too much. I'm sure he's a very smart man, Alistair Clarkson. I think he's a great coach. So he's obviously seen merit in something. But I just think prior opportunity still got to be up there in some way, shape or form.
Just before we finish on last night, I want to touch on the Carlton side of things. How frustrated would their fans be getting at the moment with these slow starts? And what are you seeing from the Blues in terms of what they can improve on? Because we often speak about their strengths and a lot of their young players, but what are their real glaring weaknesses at the moment, Boomer, that you think are fixable over the next 3 or 4 weeks?
Well, I think you look at their 3 tools up forward in Casbolt. Lots been said about Mackay and
McGovern.
Who's the other? McGovern, who hasn't really fired a shot just yet. So I know Charlie Curnow's out, but everyone's talking about they have got goal scoring power up there. You add Eddie Betts and you add Jack Martin to that, who I think is a really, really good player. I just thought they would have been able to kick bigger scores. I mean, in the end last night, they've kicked 8 goals, 7, But to half time, there were two goals. You know, they were 16 points. So I think the improvement comes from the midfield going okay, and you know Walsh and Cripps, you know what you're going to get pretty much every week from them. But I think their tools have been a little bit disappointing for me, just you know, in these first four rounds. And I think once they start marking the ball, actually Casbolt was pretty good last week. But other than that, the other two haven't really fired a shot.
Collingwood v Essendon tonight at the MCG. Collingwood $1.44 favourites at this stage. In comes Sharenberg, Treloar, which is a big in, and Varco. Out Jeremy Howe, who's injured, of course, for most of the season. Still side bottom suspended, and Noble has been omitted. Three changes for the Dons as well, with Hibbard coming in, Laverde and Phillips. So two first gamers there for Essendon. Bell Chambers had been managed. Francis is injured, and Zach Merritt has been suspended. Boomer, what are you thinking about tonight's game at the G? Will it be a problem for Collingwood losing a couple of key players in Howe, who was almost in all-Australian form and still side bottom?
Yeah, it will be. I think Howe is one of the best backs going around, reads the play. He plays on someone, but then just plays off him and sees ball, gets ball. You've got to love those players, and you know we're going to miss a screamer or two every single week. Side bottom's the one, though. I know he got shut down last week by De Boer. He's one of Collingwood's, if not most important players, because you sit on Adams, you sit on Pendlebury, and side bottom, you know, racks them up outside the contest. I think he's a huge loss, but that probably compensates the Merritt loss for the Bombers, for me. I think Collingwood bat a lot deeper through the midfield. Essendon haven't beaten Collingwood since 2016, so it's been a while, so they'll be going after him, no doubt, but I just don't know if they've got the depth through the midfield to match up with the Pies for me.
Adam, what's happening at your club? Tom Bell, Chambers managed. No one believes that. So he's been dropped.
Rested. Managed. He's sore.
Okay.
He's sore.
How's his form been this season?
They've only played four rounds, rather.
Yeah, I know.
Come on.
I know.
25 weeks apart.
He was probably quiet last week to how he would want to play. So give him a week off, freshen him up, get him ready for the hub.
They didn't go with Connor McKenna, obviously. Nah. There was a bit of talk.
There was a bit of talk, though. I think they want to get a run in a scratch match this week. You know, obviously he's been very interrupted with his preparation. He was back late. Then obviously what happened and the emotional toll more than the physical toll that took on him over those 10 days was pretty taxing. But look, Essendon need to pick the tempo up. That's what I see. I think when Essendon play a cute game, a stop-start game, that's when they get themselves in trouble. When they lift the tempo and play with dash and dare, that's when they're at their very, very best. So they need to get Tip and Woody into the game early. He's been quiet the last couple of weeks. Fantasia looked okay returning from injury, so they want a lot from him. So for Essendon to play that up-tempo game at Stringer, Tip and Woody and Fantasia that have to play well. So the midfield, obviously with Zach Merritt, who's been a constant for so many years now, will be interesting. That will probably give Parrish more minutes, which I think he's been craving.
Why is he not playing more in the midfield?
Yeah.
He was the one I was going to ask you about.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're all throwing our remote control at the TV last Saturday night when he didn't come up into the midfield late. But at the same time, he's probably been a dangerous forward that's kicking goals. Kicked two last week. So, you know, it's 6-1, half a dozen the other. Do you bring him up onto the ball or do you leave him in the forward line to try kick the goal? So,
well, when you draft someone in the top five...
Yeah, as a midfielder, you play him in the midfield, play him in their best position.
Boomer, can I ask you about David Zaharakis? Where's he at?
It's a tough one. You don't write off very good players. I like David because he's an accumulator. He finds the football. He's smart with his ball use. But at the minute, he hasn't started the year super well or as well as he would have liked to. How old is Zaka?
30.
Yeah, okay. So people are going to start writing him off. Blokes like you sitting in there in a nice warm office, just you can't get a kick and he's 30. Let's get rid of him.
Absolutely.
That's how it works, isn't it, Rama?
Lucky you got to 30.
Yeah, exactly. He'll bounce back, but he's a very smart footballer. He might not have the impact that he had 3 years ago, but he's a very smart footballer, and smart footballers find a way. He'll certainly do that. For me, the other thing, Ramon, I was going to ask you is, are there three most influential or important players out of the team? Danaher, Merritt and Heppel. Are they their three most important, do you think?
Well, Joe,
or is there someone else that would chuck there?
Joe, unfortunately, hasn't been there for a long time, so they learned to play probably without him, unfortunately. I think from, Heppel and Merritt, from a performance and from out on-ground leadership, you're probably right, Boomer.
It'd be interesting to see how the Dons fare.
I'm fascinated to see how Collingwood go without Howe.
Yeah, I know.
Sidebottom is a star. We all know that. But Jeremy Howe, I think since he's crossed over from Collingwood, he's played 84 out of a possible 90 games for him and turned into one of the very best defenders in the game. So, and the role that he played and the partnership that he was forming with Darcy Moore.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what the Pies do.
Jeez, it was a good contest. I know he got injured from that contest, but jeez, he went hard. Those two players just eyeballing the footy in the middle of them and going hell for leather was sensational.
Yeah, the other thing there, Maisie, or boys, that you lose leadership. You don't just lose a really good player. And I just look at their back line. Roughhead's been around for a while, but I don't see him as a massive, huge leader. Crisp is still fairly young. Sharenberg, Maynard's still fairly young. And Darcy Moore's, made the switch forward to back. The good players, they see the ground really well. And that's why Howe comes off and marks the ball, because he sees it exceptionally well. And by all reports, he's got great leadership in terms of voice and setting up their structure. So it'd be interesting. You don't just lose a really good player. You lose a really good leader. And sometimes that can hurt you.
All right. Tips, everyone. Collingwood and Essendon tonight.
Collingwood Football Club.
Oh, Ramage, pause it.
Collingwood.
Essendon.
Take your duffel coat off and be an expert. That's allegedly what you are.
I think Essendon are a terrific chance to win the game. That's why I'm selecting them.
Wow. Collingwood for Whitey and half, by the way, as well. Jeez.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the Pies, Maisie, and I'd love to get an update on the total or the running score, if that's okay, at some stage today.
We can do that.
Oh, yeah. No, you're one behind, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what the score is. I'm actually a little bit antsy about it, so I need to know.
I wouldn't have brought it up. Oh, actually, no, you're going okay, Boomer. You're going all right. West Coast and Sydney play tomorrow. West Coast, a few changes for them. Alan McGovern, Nelson and Waterman come in. Brandis, Schofield, Hickey and Jetta are out. Big changes at Sydney as well. Clark, Gray, Melican and O'Rourdan come in. Naismith, Sinclair is injured. Big loss, considering they lost Naismith as well. Taylor and Fox have been omitted. Who's going to ruck for Sydney? Are we going to see Alirelia spend most of the time in there?
He's probably going to have to.
He'll have to. He'll spend. Now, John Longmire doesn't want to do that. He wants to play him as a key defender.
But Malikan has had a lot of injuries. He was, a couple of years ago, a very good key defender.
Yep, so he'll do that. Alir will play in the ruck. They may change that around. It was such a shame with Naismith, obviously, what happened last week. But unfortunately, that's football sometimes. It's not kind. They'll make do. Alir's played in the ruck before, and he's done a really good job. So, again, you expect him to be a follower around the ground, going to add to the midfield rather than, like some most ruckmen, just don't do much.
Big task against. Oh, jeez, nice little drop by there for Rama. He's got a tough task too against Nick Nat. It's not like he's coming up against the first year ruckman.
He's as athletic as Nick Nat.
Yeah, he's he's about 5 centimetres shorter than him.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay.
It's just probably if he can maintain that for the whole game, isn't it? I think an athlete like Alir will certainly contribute to jumping and doing all that sort of stuff and running around like another mid. Rammer, totally agree. It's just probably how long he can keep that up for and who gives him the chop out. And when he does get a chop out, how much dominance the West Coast Eagles can have on ball.
So this is likely to be West Coast's last game in the hub.
Mm. Yep.
So this is an important one, just to get some momentum going back to Perth.
So it can't be a total whitewash being up there.
No. Tips?
West Coast.
West Coast.
West Coast.
All right, and
dropping
Sydney,
Jetta, a bit of a statement.
Sydney for half. Half has gone Sydney.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
No, he's gone West Coast.
He's off his medication, isn't he?
No, he's like the kiss of death. We shouldn't just read his out.
Geelong and the Gold Coast are spoken about this game a bit already. Narkel and Taylor in. Atkins and Stewart both injured. No change for the Suns, which is always a good sign for a young team, and they've got plenty of confidence tomorrow down at GMHBA Stadium.
I'm not. If it was at Metricon or at maybe even Marvel, I would consider it. But Geelong at home, big game, milestones everywhere.
Yeah, Cats won't blow these milestones. They'll play a lot more offensive.
Yeah, it's the occasion for the Cats in at 300 and 350. It's a huge day for their footy club, and I don't think they can let this one slip. And they haven't been playing great footy. On the other hand, Gold Coast are doing everything right. But I agree a little bit with Ramo. If it was up at Metricon, you would certainly look at it, but not down there. I think the Cats for me.
Right, Geelong for Whitey and half as well. The Dogs and North, John Shackey and Wood come in. Out go Lloyd Norton and Butler. Cunnington and McMillan in for the Roos. Zeeble injured and Ahern. Which way are you leaning here, boys?
On the basis of North Melbourne's week, I'm going to go the Dogs.
Yeah, Dogs have got their mojo back.
Boomer?
Yeah, we know who we're going for, mate. Buddy Kangas.
I just thought I'd test him. So the Dogs as well for Whitey and half. Kangas for Boomer. Brisbane and Port Adelaide at the Gabba tomorrow. Berry and Martin in. Smith and Zorko injured. Big loss for the Lions. One-word tips, gents?
I think Port keep rolling. I think they like it up there.
It's a long one word.
Port. Brisbane.
Brisbane. Boomer?
Port.
Port. Okay, Port for half, Brisbane for Whitey. And then the last three games, extended squads on Sunday. Adelaide and Freo at Metricon.
Fremantle.
Oh, Fremantle.
Boomer? I actually think Adelaide can get over with. Fife out is huge. I don't know which other game Adelaide's going to win at the minute, so I'm going to go with the Crows.
All right. Crows for Boomer, Frio for Whitey and half. Melbourne and Richmond on Sunday. Scotty?
Tigers can't be that bad again.
Yeah, they've got to turn the corner, the Tigers.
Is this the one?
I agree with the boys.
Where they get something going, Boomer? The Tigers?
Yeah,
for
I think it is. I think they have to, don't they? Their tools haven't really fired a shot like the Saints' tools, and they'll get the job done this week.
Half and Whitey with the Tigers as well. And then an interesting game to finish. GWS and Hawthorn. We saw the Hawks control the game for three quarters last week, but then almost fell in a hole at the end. They're $2.35 outsiders against the Giants. This one's up at Giants Stadium on Sunday, the 6:10 p.m. clash. Which way are you heading here, Scotty?
Giants,
brave enough to tip Hawthorn?
No, I thought about it. It'll be close. Giants, though.
Phil Davis has been named.
Yeah, yes. He won't play.
Back spasm.
Giants.
Giants. Boomer?
Yep. Certainty of the week for me this week.
Ooh.
Giants.
Ooh. Giants for you.
Can I just make a new segment for the show?
Certainty of the week. There you go.
That's what's certainty. I think the Giants get the job done pretty easily this week.
And half has tipped Hawthorn. That's no surprise. And why with the Giants as well?
The Breakfast Club, 6 till 8:30 weekdays on RSN 927.